Welcome back, writers, to another Writers Wednesday episode. If you are an author of historical Christian romance, then I encourage you to connect with authors in your genre through HCRW. HCRW is our writers group for historical Christian romance authors. We offer community, connection, critiquing, and training. Memberships start at just $3 a month. Visit literaryscape.com/HCRW to learn more. And join Terry Whalen on September 19th from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as he walks you through how to write a book proposal that sells for just $17. This training is free for our HCRW editing members. And this Friday, I will have a big announcement and one that many of you have been waiting for and you do not want to miss. So be sure to tune in to this Friday's episode and sign up for our newsletter to be among the first to hear this exciting announcement. All right, let's get into this week's Writers Wednesday episode. Author Sarah R. Turnquist describes herself as a coffee-loving, word-slinging, clean historical romance author whose superpower is converting caffeine into novels. She has a wealth of knowledge on how to write a romance novel. So enjoy this insightful discussion with Sarah. Hey, everyone. I am so excited to have Sarah here with us today to talk about writing for Christian romance. She is an expert on this. And if you haven't caught her podcast episode with Thomas Umstead Jr., you'll need to also listen to that one. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much. It is always good to talk with you.
I always have a blast. You're just a wealth of knowledge, and I just love picking your brain. Oh. So I know before we dive in here, I kind of wanted to share, you write historical Christian romance, I write historical Christian romance. So we're talking about writing for the Christian romance field, and I just wanted to share a little bit about where our romance level is. So I'll start with mine. I am high on the romance, and my line that I use is I'm packing the heat and riding the line. And really, because I'm targeting readers who are maybe new to the faith and have been kind of stuck in the secular romance, but are looking for cleaner romance, basically. And so just kind of trying to bridge the gap. So that's where I'm writing from. Where are you writing from?
That is a really interesting question. I would say that if you are familiar with Karen Whittemire and Tamara Lee, they are two different historical periods, of course, but that is kind of the level of the heat that I write. Some stories will have a little more intensity in the heat and in the romance, and some of them will be a little bit less, but I definitely have that, you know, real people experience real emotions and have real feelings when they're in that kind of relationship, and that relationship is growing. So I'm very realistic about that with closed doors.
Yes, I agree. I've read a few of your books, and I'd say, yeah, you probably line up right with those two ladies as well when it comes to romance level. So I know we're going to talk a little bit about reader expectations, who our audience is, the relationship development that you talked about. So I'll let you kind of take off here.
All right. Excellent. And talking about our heat level is a great way to start, because there is a market for the heat level that each of us write. Mm-hmm. There is a market, there is an audience for the more, I'll describe it as Jeanette Oak style of more of a sweet, people consider that a sweet, clean romance where, you know, a kiss at the end of the story is the most heat level you're going to get, really. And then there is the audience for, I'm going to say, like a Jodi Hedlund, who really does have a lot of that chemistry and a lot of that physical heat in her stories, but all of them are clean. So the audience is going to vary for those different levels and everything in between, but there is an audience for the story. Our job as writers, especially as romance writers, is to own that space that we're in the sense that we understand what our heat level is, we understand what we're comfortable writing, and we just commit to that. Because if you develop this audience for your sweeter, cleaner romance story, and then all of a sudden you're writing something that, I don't know, something more comparable to Jodi Hedlund, then your audience is going to be confused. They're going to feel, you know, quite honestly, they feel a little lied to if they have these expectations that you set up for them, and then you've written something completely different. When we talk about romance as a genre, the genre expectations are what make up any genre, but the expectations of the romance readers tend to be the most strict. Romance readers know what they want, and they expect to have that kind of story over and over again. It's why we see the same tropes over and over and over again. Tropes are not a bad thing. We all take our unique spin on tropes, but there are people out there, romance readers, that love Marriage of Convenience, and they're going to find every Marriage of Convenience book out there in their heat level, and they're just going to live in that space. So if you write good Marriage of Convenience books and you love that trope, own it, own it. Not every book needs to be the same, but you can play on that trope in a lot of different ways. The things that are common for all romance stories is that the love story has to be central to the story. If you have something that's more fantastical and it has a romance in it, but the romance is not central to the story, then you've written a fantasy with romantic elements. So if the love story is on the side, like a subplot, versus the main focus of the story, then that's not really classified in the romance genre. And the romance has to have a emotionally satisfying and optimistic ending, a happily ever after or happily for now. I know a lot of people, they want to have unique endings, and that is perfectly fine. But the truth of the matter is, if you don't have your two characters, the hero and heroine, together at the end of the story with a happily ever after, a happily after for now, then you have not written a romance, not one that the romance readers at large will find satisfying and be happy with. You'll get a lot of hate mail. I'm just telling you, it's going to happen. And yeah. I know people point out and they're like, but Nicholas Sparks. Yes, I would classify Nicholas Sparks, in my opinion, more as women's fiction with romantic elements, because he does not always have, spoiler alert, does not always have the couple happily ever after. Mm-hmm. Some of the other common elements that are not must for every story, but things that we find in common in romance stories, are a sympathetic heroine, someone we can relate to, someone we can root for, someone we can feel for, a strong hero. And I know we hear that and we think strong physically, and that is sometimes something that romance readers want to read. But more importantly is the strength of character, the strength of his morals and his honor, those kind of things. Romance readers love a strong hero. There has to be emotional tension. We've heard over and over, writers, haven't we, that the story is fueled by conflict. And that is absolutely true. So you need to dial up that emotional tension. An interesting plot. I know your plots probably look like mine all over the place, but the plot needs to move at a steady pace. And what I mean by that is it doesn't have to be the same pace the whole novel, but you don't want to have a scene that is super slow and then a scene that's really fast, and then a scene that's really slow. You need to balance your pace. Yes, your reader needs to take a break, so you can't speed through the novel the whole time, but you need to have some movement to the plot. And of course, again, the happily ever after. That is a common element in romance novels. I can't stress that enough. I was not happy about that when I first started writing romance, because I was like, well, I want to do something unique and fun. And yeah, that's not a romance, though. It's fun and you can do it. It's your story. You can write it however you want. But we need to respect the market and the genre and the expectations of the reader. We're not going to give the reader everything they expect, right? But this is why it's important to know who your reader is. So the audience for romance is made up of 82. These are stats from later in the 2010, somewhere around 2017 is where these stats were taken. But the romance audience in general is 82% women and then 18% men, although the percentage of men reading romance is actually on the rise. Statistically, the average income for your romance reader is somewhere around $55,000 a year. They're going to be in the age range of 35 to 40 years old. In general, not across the board, but in general, this is when you narrow it down as much as you can. 92% of romance readers like to read in print. 64% prefer ebook or will read an ebook, and then 35% will read an audiobook. So that all adds up to more than 100%. I realize that. But some people that read print also read ebook, like myself. So that
and some do all three, like myself.
I do all three. I tell you what, my kids are of the age that I'm running here, there, and everywhere. So audiobook is where I live these days for my fiction. Most romance readers are coming from the South or the Midwest, and they're Christian. So statistically, that's where you are. However, your target audience may be outside of those parameters. Some of us are writing later in life romances, but it is very important for us as writers to have our target reader, even to come up with like an avatar or a bio or a profile or whatever you will for your target reader. And that's the reader you need to have in mind when you write the story, because the story can be a story of your heart, but where your heart and your audience's needs intersect is where your market is. And it is a business. Writing is about art, but it's also a business. So for me, I've kind of honed in this character. I named her Holly. I don't know why. I name everything. That's why. She is a female, 38 years old, stay-at-home mom. She has 2.5 kids, because everybody in the United States has 2.5 kids, apparently. She's from the southeastern United States, and she's a Protestant Christian. But I even went a little bit deeper just because I like the layers. So for Holly, she believes that no one is perfect, that we all have stuff God is working out in us. She's interested in crafting, loves being with friends, and a little bit overwhelmed by the daily grind. So she has, with these kids and the daily grind, she has this high stress and she needs escape, something that she can relate to. It's easy to read, but not... And there's nothing wrong with this, but my books are not what I would call cotton candy light. There is a market for that. So if you write that, you write that and you own it. But that's not what I write. So my avatar, so Holly, she's not preferring that kind of story. She wants something with a little more, I'm going to use the word grit. I hate to, because that word gets a little bit overused in the current Christian romance genre. But it really is a fitting word for what many of us are gravitating toward. So it's important to know what makes up your romance novel, those just very few basic things, and your audience. I will just mention really quickly the top subgenres. Romantic suspense is the most popular subgenre of romance, followed by contemporary, followed by historical.
So we're up in that top three there.
We sure are. And those three kind of shift around as time goes by. So it depends on when you take that gauge as to how that turns out.
I would say, too, one of the ways I try to market my books are a little different. They're historical Christian suspense romance is what I call them, because I have a lot of suspense mixed in there. But one of the tips I got from one of our guests on the podcast was it was all about pitching your book. But she said, compare it to movies or TV shows. So I said, this is like a Tombstone meets Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Oh, I have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. So people on can kind of relate to that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say about my Cripple Creek series, especially the first book, I say it's like Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman meets Anne of Green Gables meets a little of When Calls the Heart, this kind of feel to the to the story. So I do agree with you. I think that's super helpful because people have that feeling about movies and TV shows. I like that, though. I saw that on your page. Yeah.
I think it also helps it for me, like looking at it from a reader's standpoint to say, oh, I think I'm really going to like this book. Whereas sometimes the back cover blurb, it may be very well written, but I can still sit there and go, I don't know if this is really a story for me or not. So just a little tip.
Yeah, I can totally relate to everything that you're saying, especially about reading the back cover blurb. And again, it's not about how well written it is. The story can feel when you especially and you know, writers, you know, that when you have to boil it down to two paragraphs, sometimes it can come across a little dry. So having those overtones when you describe what movies and television shows you would relate it to or other authors, other popular authors in your genre can help make that hump for your reader, overcome that hump to purchase. I did want to talk briefly about that when you're writing the romance, as you're developing the relationship, we do a lot of talking, as you mentioned, Melissa, we do a lot of talking about character development and it's very important, but there is a place to recognize that the human relationship situation as a romance develops, there are some common steps that take place. So when you are putting a couple together on the page, the first stage is to establish their flaws because nobody, I'm telling you, nobody wants to read about two perfect people falling in love and living happily ever after. It's not going to sustain a novel. And it's not going to sustain anybody's interest. Not only that, it would be a very short novel, but the characters need to catalyze each other's growth. So before they establish growth, you need to establish the flaws of both characters. And I think something we're seeing in the Christian romance market that didn't exist when I was a teenager reading Christian romance and being introduced to that genre, we're seeing both characters having flaws. We're seeing flawed women and flawed men. I think a lot of times, not necessarily purposefully, but just the market was looking for the woman to have this arc, but not necessarily for the man to more be a static character that didn't have flaws. That was just someone as a playoff for the female character. And so I think a lot of readers are appreciating that we're seeing two flawed people and how God is using them as holy sandpaper, if you will, for each other.
So I would agree.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing, beautiful thing in our marriages and in our relationships. So you've set up the flaws, then you want to spark mutual interest. Physical attraction is important in a relationship, and it's okay at first in your novel, but again, it will not sustain the depth of a relationship for the duration of a novel. So you want your characters to be drawn to each other on a deeper level, something like shared intelligence, social status, wit, charm, humor, something that connects them beyond the physical. Then you have to introduce conflict. Conflict, again, at the core of all fiction. And then in a romance novel, it's important to give them time to bond. So we have to bring them together. And we will do this naturally, again, these romance stories, because there's a romance calling out in each of us for our father and for that relationship to happen. So story is innate to who we are. So you can look back at something you wrote before we had this podcast or you heard this podcast, and you will find some of these common elements. But the more you do them consciously, the better they flow and the better you can utilize them for your audience. So back to this point, time to bond. So you can give your two characters a mutual goal. They can be running away from danger together in your suspense stories, or working out the mystery together, working on a project of some sort, or just trying to impress each other. That can happen in stories as well. Then there's the period of separation. We all know about the breakup. It can happen over just a couple of hours or over years. You can have years between the breakup, if you will, the separation of the characters and then coming back together, depending on your characters and your plot. This really fits in, if we're going to mark it somewhere, around the third plot point, that would be the beginning of the third act. Arguments, forced apart by other characters, misunderstanding, with a caveat. romance coaches will tell you, and I'm going to tell you this too, that if one adult conversation will solve the conflict or the misunderstanding, you cannot have it sustain a separation for longer than about a scene. So let's be careful about those. I overheard this and I misunderstood. And one adult conversation, because we're dealing with adults here. Let's be adults about it.
I love that piece of advice, because in the book club, our Friday episodes, there's been some books we've talked about from mm-hmm. the reader perspective that we've said, if they would have just talked, or if they would have just told, spoke mm-hmm. together, that like this would have been solved. And mm-hmm. it does get a little frustrating. I'm just saying that from the reader's point of view, when you can say, all they had to do is sit down and talk.
Yeah, so. it feels, I'm sorry, that's my dog.
That's okay.
it feels a little weak and a little contrived and a little forced, I think, for the reader. So knowing that as the writer, you can make your conflict be a little bit more substantial,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as you think about the story, again, with our characters, we have their external story, which is the plot, their internal story, which is their change and their arc, and then the spiritual story as well. So think about all of those when you're trying to create conflict, because if you create conflict that's reasonable in one of those areas, that will be better about sustaining a separation for your characters, reasonably separating them. But finally, Happily Ever After again is going to rear its ugly head, or its happy head. They're going to come together at last after they've completed their arcs. When you've developed to both characters equally, because you need two complete characters for a romance, and you want to show both characters changing. And more specifically in the romance relationship. And if I gave you a pot of coffee and you sat down and thought about it, you could come up with these stages of your relationship in your own life, but certainly something that we want to bring onto the page as well. First step for every couple is just awareness of the other person, meeting them. Simple touches, touch on the hand, touch on the arm, that kind of thing. The second stage is always interest. This is more internal. There's more conflicted feelings inside of each person, especially if there's something reasonable keeping them from coming together as a couple. Then there's attraction. This is the stage where people are distracted by other thoughts of the other person. Emotions become entangled. This is where you're going to have lingering face-to-face for your characters and more meaningful touches, hug, those kind of things. And then the last stage is when they fall in love. That's internally, they're going to admit to themselves that they're in love, whether or not they admit it out loud. We all know that there's those kind of conflicts. And then they are longing for that lasting relationship. So those four stages are more for the relationship on a physical and emotional level, rather than the story at large, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
But I did want to take a minute to talk about more specifically writing historical, because that is where I live. I like to call my stories a marriage between historical events and a fictional romance relationship. So for me, and I think for a lot of historical writers, there's this spark of something historically that catches your attention, and you research and you find an event or a conflict or some piece of nugget in history that's going to fuel the historical side of the story and going to help you figure out where you place your story in time and where you place it geographically. So often that happens when you have that spark from history. Then you develop the characters and you kind of mesh those together. And I love this saying that I hear other historical writers talk about. They say, you go forward with your fiction story. When you start to get blocked, you do more research and add more history. When your history starts to feel dry, you weave in some more fiction. And I love that because it really does give you somewhere to go when you feel a little blocked, but it also helps you weave the two together really, really well. One thing that I always caution historical writers about is to know about yourself, how you feel about bringing real historical people to life on the page. So I have stories that have historical figures that we talk about, you know, living in the same time period. Like I wrote a book about the Trail of Tears, and the characters talk about the president, but I don't ever actually have him on the page. Part of that is because you need to be careful. You're allowed to do it. You're allowed to bring historical people onto your page. I brought Billy the Kid to life on the page for a lot of reasons why I did one and not the other. But you also have to be careful with how you portray individuals in history, because you want to respect and honor any descendants. You want to respect and honor the memory of those people. And you want to be honest to who they were at the same time. And sometimes that doesn't look so great. So when in doubt, I would err toward referring to them and talking about them and maybe not bringing them to life on the page unless you feel confident about your portrayal of that character. So that's one thing you have to decide. When we talk about research, because we all love research, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, that's why we write historical, right?
Yeah. I love research, and then I don't. And then I do, and then I don't. So it's important when you do research to know how to do it efficiently. I'm going to use that word, efficiently.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, one of the best ways to research is to research the subject rather than the piece of information. For example, let's go back to that novel, Trail of Tears. I needed to know when the Indian Removal Act happened to help place my story in time. So I could actually just pull up Google and search that, Indian Removal Act, and it would give me the date. And that's fantastic. But if I found a book about the Indian Removal Act, it makes me itch just to think about it. Sometimes reading these nonfiction historical texts, which can be so valuable. But here's the thing, friends, is that if you read a book about the subject, you'll find a lot of information that you may not need in the novel, but you will find things that will inform your story, help create plot twists, things that you would have never thought to search for on Google because you just didn't know. You don't know what you don't know. So we will be doing some amount of research. Even the contemporary writers are doing research on culture, music, setting, events from the past that affect the people of the present in any location. So we always talk about good resources versus bad resources, right?
Yeah.
We know what that is, right?
I would hope so.
Yes. So I always encourage people that are learning how to research to start with Wikipedia. And I know y'all are getting hives just hearing that. But here's the thing. If you will look at the bibliography for the Wikipedia article, those are some great resources. I would not encourage anyone to actually take the information from Wikipedia on face value, because it's really meant to be general information. But if you'll look at the bibliography, some of those are primary and secondary resources, like journals, books that were written at that time, letters, all of those fun things can be found there. Things that you wouldn't know to search for, but they're in that bibliography. So you're going to freak people out when you're like, I'm a historical writer and I write from Wikipedia. The bibliography.
Yes. Yeah. Because when you said Wikipedia, I was like, oh, we teach our kids at school not to use Wikipedia.
Yeah. It's not necessary because the editing of Wikipedia is so open. It's hard to trust.
Yeah.
But again, looking at what's behind that research can mine gold.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention about research, and then we'll move on, is you have different types of research that look at a subject. You have what's called the bird's eye view and the worm's eye view. So when I'm researching for my medieval series, it takes place in the Czech lands, which would be the Kingdom of Bohemia at that time. So if I want to know the way the wars went at that time, the Hussite Wars is what I'm talking about specifically, there is a book called The Hussite Wars, and it will give me a lot of information about the war from a general point of view. If I want to know what the temperature was like, what it was like to be in the camp, any historical details like that, I'm going to find a book that was written about a soldier or about a general. And there happens to be a book about the general for the Hussite army. It's called The Warrior of God. And that is a great way for me to get feet on the ground, you know?
Yeah. I have found, like, right now I'm looking at my books up here. I am in mm-hmm. the middle of Randy Alcorn. I don't know if you've read any of mm-hmm. his, or if anyone's read any of his books. It's If God Is So Good. And he's just going through this whole debate of evil versus good, and what does that mean for, if God is so good, why does he allow evil? Just the different arguments. And I am honestly listening to it to try to come up with arguments for my characters who just aren't ready to believe that God's good. You know what I mean? Because for me, growing up in a home where we went to church, like, God was just a part of my life from day one, right? So it's so hard for me personally to wrap my head around this mind of, like, God isn't good, right? Mm. And so sometimes, I don't know if you find yourself doing that. We do the historical research, but then I also find myself trying to research for my character that's struggling to have a relationship with God, too.
Absolutely. That's a really great point. I appreciate that because we only have our perspective. And as writers, we have this wonderful gift that we can step into someone else's shoes, but we can only do that through our creativity and imagination and what God gives us. So there is a place to be honoring and respectful that we cannot experience someone else's life fully. So I love that tidbit of researching the perspective that is so different from yours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, and to your point, you're right. We can't, if we're going to bring historical figures in real life, we don't really know what it was like for them. So it is, you do have to be careful. I watched a behind the scenes of the Titanic movie with the director and things. Mm-hmm. And they talked about how they changed some things from their original script because the descendants of some of those, some of the actual passengers were not happy with the way that their relative was portrayed in the movie. So you do have to be careful of that.
Yeah, it's the same reason that, you know, when I write about soda, I will call it soda instead of Coca-Cola. You can use the brand name. There's nothing wrong with that. However, if anyone finds it disparaging in any way, you've opened yourself up to potentially a lawsuit. That's a big, like, this could possibly happen. It's a very small chance it would happen, but I wouldn't want to open myself up to something like that.
So mention them, right?
Yes.
It's probably the easiest way. I have Wyatt Earp in mind. He's mentioned. He's not in it. He's just mentioned.
Yeah, and his life was, oh my goodness, I did some research on that. One of my Convenient Risk books takes place in Tombstone, kind of tangential to the shootout at the OK Corral, but I did research on Wyatt Earp because he's around in the town at that time. So his history is a little bit complex and convoluted.
It is. Yes. Mm-hmm. I have found that too in my research. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other great tips, tricks for writing for Christian romance?
I do get this question sometimes about what do you do with real world problems with a sensitive Christian audience. And I think it is important as writers, as you feel comfortable and as you are aware that your audience is prepared for you to tackle it, your specific audience, there is nothing wrong with talking about topics that are hard in our world, because we want to shine a light on them, right, in those dark places. But the language, the words that you use need to fit into a Christian worldview, if that makes sense. So you can mm-hmm. talk about, you know, violence, but I wouldn't show the violence on the page. You can talk about domestic assault, but be careful how you handle the actual event on the page, because we do need to be sensitive that we are dealing with a Christian worldview. We're dealing with Christians that can sometimes be sensitive. And then there's the whole thing of trigger warnings and being sensitive to someone that's reading your book that may have been through that. We can't prepare for everyone, but as Christian writers, we need to make sure how we handle those pieces of reality. It's yeah. the same reason that we close the door. Yes, we know this married couple is having intimate situations. We can talk about it, but we need to close the door on the actual happenings, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
It does make sense. We don't need play-by-play for that, for sure.
Thank you. Yes.
I do know Jodi Basey. I don't know if you've read any of her books, that she has a historical line. And she did put in one of hers deals with substance abuse back in the 1800s. And she does put a warning on the front of it that this may trigger some people. So she just kind of gives her readers a heads up with that too. So I definitely that's an option.
I definitely would agree with you that if you are going to bring more of that onto the page, then you need to start thinking about trigger warnings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know you are, we've kind of talked a little bit too just recently about, you know, using historical figures. And am I right? You're still in the middle of writing one that's based off a true story of a trial that took place with the railroad.
Yes. That book actually came out in February. So I just finished it. You know, in the indie world, things move very quickly from completion of manuscript editing, publication. So You're not wrong. I just finished it. And it was a very fascinating piece of history. And I struggled a little bit with a historical figure that I did bring to life on the page. He was the fireman in the engineering cockpit or cab of the train when this accident happened. And his testimony was disregarded because he was a man of color at this time in the Gilded Age. There were just certain ways that people conducted business and handled information and who it was coming from. Not that it's okay, but it was a reality at that time. And so the investigation into the train accident was ruled one way because they had the testimony of men that were not men of color, and then the black man, Sim. And I wanted to bring Sim to life on the page, but I also wanted to respect and honor that I don't live in a situation that I'm challenged by preconceived notions based on something so external about me that is not in my control. And so I wanted to put myself in Sim's shoes and how frustrating and discouraging and helpless that can be, but also respecting that I have never lived to that extent where it was just a cultural, societal standard, if you will. And so I ended up deciding to put him on the page, but not as a point of view character. So I wanted to offer that level of respect to show his struggle from someone else's point of view.
That's a great way to approach it. I like that. I have not read it yet. I didn't realize it came out in February. I guess I need to pay more attention here. Oh. Awesome. Okay, so I also wanted to give you a chance to share, because you've got it. I mean, you have your own writing going on that you're working on. So if you want to share a little bit about that, but then you also are you on the board for the Kentucky Christian Writers Conference?
Yes, well? I am the deputy director, deputy coordinator. Can't quite remember. I know deputy's in it because I'm like the co-coordinator, the sub-coordinator for the conference this year. And for the next 2 years, I'll be the conference director. So I am very excited about our conference this year. I'll go ahead and talk about it just a little bit. It's going to be in October 17th through 19th. So Thursday evening through Saturday later afternoon, depending on whether you do the post session or not. It's in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. The keynote is John Riddle from I Love to Write Day. His website is ilovetowriteday.com. And our theme is courageous and just coming into the world knowing that we are light bearers and being courageous with what God has given us to bring through our words. The verse that we're leaning into is Deuteronomy 31:6, that where God through Moses is telling the people to don't be afraid, be courageous. I'm going with you. I will be with you. So you can find out more about the conference or you can register at KentuckyChristianWriters.com. That's K-Y and then Christian Writers spelled out .com. You can register. You can learn more about the conference. You can see the speaker lineup. You can see the workshop lineup. So finding out if there's what suits you at that conference, if it's a good fit for you. But we also have the amazing Hallie Bridgman will be doing a post session about self-publishing. Fantastic class that she does, but she's going to be doing a post session that's a multi-hour session on this. And that is an add-on for the conference. But it is quite the bargain add-on. So if you are even tempted to think about indie publishing, I would highly recommend that you consider the Kentucky Christian Writers, of course, but also consider the post session as well, because she will bring a wealth of experience and information to that session. For me, in early September, so I think September the 3rd, the last book of the Cripple Creek series will be coming out. So it is in editing right now, and I got my content edits back. And my writer friends out there, you know that you just sit and you just wait for those, especially the content edits. The line edits, I'm like, yeah, fix the grammar. But the content edits, I'm like, oh, did she like it? And I love my editor. We have a wonderful professional relationship, but she's very, she's a little more matter of fact about things. So she's like, the plot is solid. Here's some things that I would suggest you think about, you know, so none of this, like, it was a great, it's the best story you've ever written. You know, I want some of the angels singing and it just doesn't happen. But I love about this editor that I use, that she's a freelance editor, that she does not let me get away with anything. So that's the kind of editor you want in your corner.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's scary sometimes, but it's honestly, it's what makes you grow.
Absolutely. So this story takes a character from the first book. So these books are not like sequential in the sense that they lean on each other, but this is a character that we see first in Hope and Cripple Creek. And so this is a redemption story, and we're taking a character that you kind of like to not like. Yeah. From the first book. She's a bit much. We all know those kind of people. And she makes some choices that I don't think are good choices. I don't think any of us would say they were good choices.
Yeah.
So what I have done in this story is kind of delve into the layers behind her choices, seeing things through a perspective that is honestly very different from mine again, and what drove her to make those decisions, and how can she step beyond that into a redemptive place. So she was a lot of fun to write, but very different to write, mm-hmm. as well. She's a little spitfire.
Yes, I remember the character you're talking about. We highlighted mm-hmm. that series, I want to say maybe last year, or was it? Mm-hmm. I think I say it was last year on the podcast. And I believe we're circling back around when the last one comes out. So
yeah,
great series. We enjoyed
it. Thank you.
Because you've got two novellas. I'm looking at them up here on my two novellas,
Yeah, and it's
four novels.
Yeah, it starts with Hope in Cripple Creek. And then there's a Christmas novella that is the second book, Christmas in Cripple Creek. And then it goes to Faith in Cripple Creek. And then this new one. And there are two prequel novellas.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because there were just characters that were talking to me. They needed their backstories told. They needed their relationship stories told, their romance. And I had to. I'm a writer. My hands are chained. I like coffee. I tell character stories.
Mm-hmm. Love it. We enjoyed them. So
good.
We'll definitely be circling back around.
Y'all bless me. Up. You bless my author heart.
Oh, all right. Anything else you'd like to share about writing or your writing?
It's an adventure, isn't it? I love how God gives us the seed of the story and that we partner with him, because I truly do feel that that makes Christian writing different, because we're partnering with the Holy Spirit to bring light. Again, I keep saying that, but it's so true. We're bringing light into a dark world, into dark situations, and finding the hope. Not the silver lining always, but the hope that is there.
Yes. I love that. I love that. We did, Sarah Sundin was on one of our coffee and books events. Mm-hmm. And she shared that, just like you, it's that hope. She goes, I can't be there for every reader, but my books can. And sometimes my books can help speak light and hope into their lives where I can't. So
yeah,
I love that you guys are on the same vibe there. It's very true. And it's fun. And sometimes it's a little scary. Would you agree?
I would agree. It's one of those things, though, you got to trust that God is going to put your book that he's helped you write in the hands of the readers that need it. And that's you can hone your audience all you want, but he is going to direct the path of your book.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah, I love talking to you, having you on the podcast again. I for anyone listening, Sarah is a wealth of knowledge. Definitely visit her website. One of our authors connected with you and did some editing with you as well.
Oh, yes.
And she's loved it. She just loves the feedback you've given her. So thank you. for taking the time to do that too.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And one of the new things on my website is book club kits. You have inspired me with your book club.
I love it. I love it when authors have book club kits. It just makes it so much easier.
Yes. So we have one for Laura, and we have one for Hope in Cripple Creek and Christmas in Cripple Creek, and they're free to download. Just go to my website, find them, look at them. Even if you're just kind of like, I wonder what this is all about.
That is awesome. Oh, I love that. Well, I'm glad we could inspire you to add that on there. Great. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing your knowledge with us here today.
Mm-hmm. Anytime.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. I would like to invite you to connect with us further and get a free read. Right now, if you sign up for our newsletter, you will get the first 9 chapters of my book, Unwavering Faith. Plus, you'll receive news about our events for both readers and authors. You can sign up at literaryscape.com/newsletter. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.